So I'm going to speak on public health funding using a determinants of health approach, learnings from the field. And I have no relationships to disclosure other than I'm married to a wonderful man. And this is Nova Scotia. In the corner, I've circled it, just so you can see yourself in relation to Philadelphia. And I just want to set the context talking about Canada, because it is important in terms of the funding. So Canada's got 10 provinces and 3 territories, total population of about 30 million. And it crosses 6 time zones, so it's quite large. Nova Scotia is the second largest province, a lot of coastline, and we do have a mix of urban and rural in our province. Nova Scotia is a parliamentary democracy. We have a House of Assembly with 52 members, and Nova Scotia's economy is primarily resource-based, although recently joined by tourism, finance, and technology. And the Canada Health Act is Canada's federal legislation for publicly funded health care insurance, and it identifies these 5 principles of accessibility, portability, comprehensiveness, universality, and public administration. And while our health care system isn't perfect, it's darn good. Delivery of health care is a provincial responsibility, and so each province has a slightly different approach in how to implement the Canada Health Act. And our focus in public health delivery system is promotion, protection, and prevention. And we don't have a strong primary care component of it because that is used done by the primary care section of government. So this is Nova Scotia, and I show this because we have 9 districts, and those are the 9 districts that we fund. And it is with these 9 districts that we've developed the funding approach. So in terms of Nova Scotia, our health budget is $3.3 billion and 45% of the provincial budget overall, which is really significant and a major challenge for us. The health department is headed by a minister, which is an elected official. So you may have someone who has been a teacher or a pipe fitter as your minister. And the deputy minister is the senior public servant and is the interface between the public service and the elected official. We have 2 departments, but what we say is we have 2 departments in 1 system. The Department of Health is the acute care, and not surprisingly, 97% of the budget. And the department that I'm with is the Department of Health Promotion and Protection. We have less than 3% of the budget. And I'm going to be speaking about the public health component of that 3%, which is less than 2% of the whole budget. So the background on our funding approach is that we had an absence of a formal documented process for the allocation of resources. And the concerns from the district health authorities was that the money wasn't distributed equitably. And so when we got money, we often divided it by 9. So the district that had 300,000 was not happy that they got the same amount as the district that had 35,000. And there was also some concern about what percentage of the funding was kept by the provincial level, which is where I work, versus at the local level where service delivery occurs. And we wanted to make our funding decisions using a population health approach. We wanted to actually walk the talk that we spoke about. So we set up a working group to lead the process. We did a literature review. We did an environmental scan across Canada. There was precious little in terms of public health funding formulas. Although there was some that was done in Ontario, which was used to make cuts, which you can imagine was a really happy thing to do. And in Alberta, they developed a formula, but they'd never implemented it. So we worked with our statistics agency called Community Counts, and we pulled together the Public Health Working Group, which were the leaders of the process, and we engaged the CEOs and the deputy and the senior staff of the Department of Health to go through the approval process. This is an overview of what the funding approach is. Funding is divided 30% to the province and the district health authorities where the service delivery is 70%, and that 70% is then divided into 3 parts, a base component, a population-based component, which is based on population, and then needs-based. And the 4 indicators that we've used for the needs-based is geography, education, income, and self-rated health. That's the big summary. So our approach, as I said, at the local level was for those 3 areas. We did it by thirds. The base part was a basically fixed cost. Population was the size of the population served. And the needs base was the determinants of health. We decided that was consistent with the population health approach. It was consistent with what Ontario had done. It incorporated feedback from the CEOs, and we always have to feed that group of people with lots of opinions. And there was very little literature to do it, except that the healthcare system had talked about some of these types of needs indicators. And we decided the Canadian Compromise, a third, a third, and a third, because there was little evidence to guide us any other way. And our population-based funding is basically based on the population of each DHA. We use the most current data, which is community counts or other Nova Scotia data. And then we said we'd look at what the population was. So if it was focused at early childhood, we'd look at the 0 to 5 age group. But primarily, we want to have the principle that this funding is to improve the population as a whole, and so that we would likely start off with looking at the population in full rather than specific target groups. The needs-based funding obviously took the most lively discussion. And this comprised of geography, which was population per kilometer of road, education, which was less than high school education, income, the medium household income, and then health for the self-rated health. And our rationale for this was these were the most discussed and similar components to what Ontario had developed. It was consistent with the population health approach. Geography, we saw that as a determinant of health as well as a proxy for service access. And when we spoke with Ontario, they had said they had really wished they'd have put more emphasis on geography, because when you're working in a rural province, it's really important to recognize that. Education obviously is a key predictor of health, and we decided since there was little evidence or literature, we were just going to use our best public health judgment in how we approached this. So what we did is we calculated these indicators based on 37 community health boards, and the reason we chose the community health boards was because we believe that captured the real differences between DHAs. So for example, in the Capital District where Halifax is, which is the largest city, they also serve communities that are 1 in 2,000 people, maybe an hour and a half from Halifax. So they don't like always being considered urban because they do have a rural component. And what we did is we took that information, we categorized it, and then weighted it, and we looked at where the natural breaks were. And then we had a discussion as a group and said, in your district health authority, does that make sense that this community health board is higher or lower? And then we had that discussion as a group. So this picture shows, in terms of education, the distribution. You can see the 37 community health boards. The three light pink areas we have universities. This is Wolfville, Acadia University, Antigonish over in the corner. And in Halifax, we have 9 universities. And it shows you the real distribution of education across the province. This one also shows income. And as you can see, the three dark areas are where the universities are. We have a lot of lobster fishermen, so that there's a lot of high income also related around the coast. But we also have big counties and big health boards that have very low medium income. And you can see this really does show the distribution and reflects the differences within each of the health boards. So we developed the funding approach. We had it approved and supported by senior executives, and we decided to apply this formula for new funding only. We weren't going to fix the world by looking at what had historically been given to the districts, but that we would use it for new funding. We agreed to do it for 2 years, and then we'd evaluate it. So this summer, we decided to do look at our evaluation. We focused on the satisfaction with the funding approach. We did a literature review, which there wasn't much new in the literature specifically related to public health. We did our cross-country checkup, which we always do. You call every province, you know everyone who's there. You call the three territories, you find out what's going on across the country. We've sent out our funding approach to several expert reviewers, and we did a survey. And we decided to do the survey of senior executives and public health leaders. So we did an online survey. We had a 53% response rate. It was a combination of multiple choice and open-ended. And our focus was the satisfaction with the funding approach. Our survey results showed that overall people were generally happy with the approach. And virtually everyone agreed that it was better than the old days when we just sort of divided everything by 9. The majority believe that the approach supports the health of the province. And this was really important for us because we really wanted the 9 districts not to be their own fiefdoms in terms of public health, but that it was really important that we looked at what the population of our province was and not just the specific district. So that was really important for us. everyone agreed that the using those thirds was good, but and most people agreed with the distribution, but you never can make everyone happy, so we had lots of comments. Everyone liked the needs. No one had really much to offer for other indicators. And self-rated health got the most comments about it not being reflective. And I'll give an example in Cape Breton, where the education and the income is very low, but it's a very, very strong cultural community. And they have the absolute worst health indicators, but they're really happy and they think they're healthy. And so so people really didn't like the self-rated health. And the distribution, we had lots of comments about geography was either too much or it should be more. And we had expected that, but it was nice to see that people generally like it. This was a surprise for us that the majority agreed that the approach should be considered for all the funding that we give out and not just new funding. And that is, I think, a journey that's going to be an interesting one over the next 2 years. In terms of our learnings, we identified that the inclusive process to develop and address the funding really builds support. It took us about 8 months or 9 months to develop the funding approach. We got good feedback. We asked people to come not representing their districts, but their interest in funding and their interest in public health. It was really important to build it theoretically, and we agreed up front that we were not going to look at what this formula meant for any district. We were going to build it theoretically, agree on it, and then see where the cards fell. And it really gets away from who gets what or who's the winners and who's the losers. And we really wanted a more evidence-based approach for our funding. And this has shown us is that our conversations have fundamentally changed in the province when we each year when the budget is released. And it's not how much did I get, but what am I going to do with the money? And it's been really a very positive collaboration between the districts and the province. And the knowledge and the comfort of the approach will support the growth of its application. So we spent a lot of time meeting with senior officials in the public health and the district health authorities. We're now being asked to work with the primary health care section, the continuing care section, to have our learnings in terms of developing a formula for those sectors. And we also know that linkage with the academic and expert review will offer some other opportunities for some good learning. That's Nova Scotia. Come and visit. And that's it. Thank you very much. It's a lively discussion. So this is the income, and that's the great education one. And it was really interesting for us to have those conversations, because this would be Halifax, and this is the south end, which is the most affluent part of Nova Scotia. And these are really, that's Sydney up there, where it's mining, and there's high unemployment. This is was big fishing, and now it has a really, poor county, not education, but you really sort of look at some of these lobster fishing places that have low education but high income, so it's a lively debate on how you include that in your formula or your approach. But to me, the learning was is that everyone looked at their county and they looked at their district health authority and they could see what they had fundamentally believed in data, and that in itself was huge for understanding for the people up in Cape Breton, which is this, is that they always said, we're different than everyone else, and then all of a sudden they were like, oh no, we all have that. And so that was, that for me was one of the biggest learnings, is that we look at it more as a collective instead of a competition, which is huge.
Any other questions for Dan?
So you mentioned that this was applied only to new funding.
Yes.
I'm just curious about the proportion of the funding to which this formula applies.
Okay, so
versus what they kept, because it's just, this is such an interesting process, I think, politically, and so I was just wondering how much. funding was actually.
So we had gotten no new funding for 22 years. And then we did a review of our public health system after, in 2003, after SARS. And we ended up getting new money for the next 3 years. And we started at a budget of about $37 million, and we got about $12 million more. So we went up 25%.
And so there was that 25% that then distributed.
Yeah. There's still lively debate around applying it to the bigger part, and some of the conversation is what should we get? You know, this is what we get, but what should we get that we don't have that answer to yet. But I think one of the things that we're trying to do is to talk to our colleagues in other sectors in the health system and say, if we all do believe that determinants of health are what make people healthy, and we all distribute our funding that way, we will be closer to the truth that we don't know.
Any other questions? One more.
I have a question actually for the two nurses, and it deals with health literacy and how you figure that fits into your public health budget. In the United States, we spend a lot of money on healthcare, and when you ask people when they leave a physician's office, what are you supposed to do between this visit and the next visit, only half of them know. So I hope the folks in Canada are smarter than they are in the U.S., but how do you do that process, and is that part of your public health duty, teaching people how to deal with chronic illness? And I'd like the difference between the Canadian view and the U.S. view, since you're not that far from the border.
Yeah, that's right. It's interesting because our public health system is, I would describe it as a lot of individual treatment or individual service, but a lot of it is community service. So actually working with communities on food security, on poverty, and then there's a good portion of working with at-risk families or at-risk school-age kids. And our interface with the primary healthcare system is good, not great, but good. And I would say that the kind of health literacy that we talk about is that people actually understand what makes them healthy. And it isn't necessarily the just eat well and smoke and be more active, but they actually understand that the income and the community and their urban environment is really important. When I worked up in the north, in Nunavut, the Inuit just, it's part of their blood. They know what makes them healthy. And it really is, it's really a joy working with them in terms of sort of saying, what do you need in your community to make you healthy? It's not what we've told them they need. It's what they actually live. So it's been really, I'm actually from the United States. I've lived in Canada for 25 years, and so it's kind of really nice to see that difference.
And I would say at our end, we're, at least in the county where I work, we have 50,000 folks, and I would say on a daily basis, we're working with either it's individual clients, one-on-one with our high-risk populations, about what does it mean, what does it mean to be healthy? I mean, that sounds big. But on a daily basis, our nurses are asking that question, seeing if the folks, what it means to them. You know, we have ideas, but what does it mean to you to be healthy? But we also work a lot with our providers. We've got health educators who are out in the community every single day. And it's kind of like that translating, and a lot of it's bridging. You know, what did you learn today when you were having care? What does that mean to you? And man, what you think they got, and then when they come home, when they hit their door. And it's taking, I would suggest, it is taking the time and slowing down. I talk fast, you figure that out. But it's just being quiet and saying, now what is it you learned, and what does it mean to you? And then listen.
And I would say more of our education has to go to the people who distribute the funding and make the decisions and the policies as opposed to the public.
Because the issue is that's an important interface, but public health, is it a public health problem or is it a primary care problem? Yeah. Is it medical care or where do you fall?
I'm not a nurse, but I can add a little bit to this. There's a HRSA-funded grant at the university that's actually spearheaded by the College of Nursing, but it's multidisciplinary, so there's public health, I'm involved in it, there's social workers involved, we have a college of pharmacy, we have a college of medicine, so we have that level of involvement. Last year we tackled health literacy, or began to tackle health literacy, And it really is a, it was eye-opening for me, because in sessions with actual patients, with whether they were residents or attending, and the physician is describing the regimen for follow-up to the patient, the patient's nodding, and it seems like there's just perfect compliance there, and the physician's talking slow and using, you know, not acronyms and not medical terminology, but usable words. And then in an interview later, you find out that the patient's nodding because they can't read, and the physician's pointing to the labeling, and the person can't read, but their pride won't allow them to say, I can't read that, and so they just nod. And so there's all different levels of health literacy, but it really is driven from our university, the need to get that level of education into the pharmacy student classroom, into the medical student classroom, into the nursing, nurse practitioner classroom, and try to affect it from that end. So, but it's a huge problem, health literacy.
Thank you. We got a lot of information this morning. We found out that from the 60s, where there was a couple of health centers, and of course they were comprehensive health centers where they did everything and to coincide with Janet's determinants of public health, and we know it's not just medical services anymore, it's the environment, it's social behavioral services. Those are the things that's causing us the problems now. You get AIDS because of a decision you make, for the most part. Now we have 1,000 centers, and some of those have grantees, so there's probably about 2,000 of those these days. So we've learned a lot, and then we have a cost model, but you have to know how to adjust it. So let me thank everybody for coming. Let's give our panel a last hand.